Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
Blake Topmeyer is the senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week wherever you find your podcast. Follow him on X at @BTopmeyer. Blake, thank God we don't have to, but if you could only watch one game this week, what would you watch?
This might be a controversial choice, and it's the one I'm covering. I would choose Ole Miss LSU. Maybe that's because that game has been so good the last two seasons. You got the coaching personalities with Lane Kiffin and Brian Kelly. So you're right. I'm glad I don't have to, but if I could only choose one, that'd be the one.
It's funny this because I think everybody agrees what a great weekend it is, and I'm find myself being the person that said y'all his whole life, and I find myself gravitating towards Penn State Oregon because I just don't know what either team is. Like, that's at least it's a barometer. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would actually be my number two choice. I mean, you know, I think I would put Alabama Georgia number three, even though that could be a great game as well and a really consequential game for Alabama. But yeah, I would put Oregon Penn State too, just because I want to figure out whether Penn State's for real or not. I mean, the first 4 weeks of the season told us absolutely nothing about Penn State. I don't think there's a team in the top 25 we've learned less about through 4 weeks than Penn State. I mean, their season starts this weekend. They had four straight byes, basically, to open the season. So, yeah, I think that's fair. And Oregon as well. Like, I think you and I looked at Oregon similarly in the preseason. Like, I was a little bit cautious with Oregon. I thought, like, I don't know if I'm all in on Oregon this season.
I was very much the same way. And then I saw what they did to Gundy, and I know that team's god awful, but it's also like, man, they can kind of name their number. But I've done it. I have put money on Penn State and James Franklin and Drew Aller in a big game.
Wow, you see that as a charitable donation? You said you put money on them?
Yeah, no, I literally, it's the classic. My formula right now is I'm riding the teams that are not traveling 3,000 miles, and the fact that every single person I know thinks that, and myself included, thinks Oregon's going to win the game, that I'm like, we all have to be wrong.
Right. Yeah, no, I see that. I look at that line, Southern Cal, Illinois as well.
Yep.
You know, Illinois just got boat raced last week, but now they're getting 6.5 points last I saw as the home team. And Southern Cal, even though they beat Purdue this season, does not have a very good history the last few years when they're traveling across multiple time zones. So,
and their coach is complaining about it. You know what I mean? Like, we played the latest game in the country last week, and now we're playing the earliest. It's like,
yeah, isn't it interesting, these coaches, and it's not to the same extreme, but Kiffin complaining about drawing Oklahoma as a rival. It's like, yeah, you guys are just now realizing what we've been saying for years. Like, this conference realignment stuff is kind of stupid. Especially in the Big Ten, the fact that you got teams, you know, in the Pacific time zone and then the Eastern time zone in the same conference, it's ridiculous. It shouldn't be that way. But, yeah, it's like the coaches have finally realized, oh, maybe this wasn't a great idea after all. Not that they got a vote in it anyway. It is sort of ironic to hear the complaints finally coming from them. It's like, yeah, we've been saying this for 4 years now.
I do think we hit – this is the – I know that everybody had this game circled. So I'm probably just preaching to the choir. I do think we hit peak college sports in 2025. San Jose State is going to play Stanford at 6:30 on the ACC Network.
Oh, baby. That's exactly what you think of when you think ACC. Right?
Absolutely. Right there.
San Jose State and Stanford. I wonder what the ratings will be for that game. I mean,
no chance the ACC Network subscribes to Nielsen. They don't want the number out there.
That's true. I did get my dollar bill in the mail from Nielsen recently. That was a nice little surprise coming in the mail, getting that dollar or two of cash. I was not selected to be part of the rating service, but you get that initial dollar bill in the mail. That's always a good feeling.
Yeah, no, my wife ended up she's like, oh, well, they sent me so and so. I was like, sweetie, you did an hour of work and got $2. I'm not really sure it's a great return. You are worth more than that.
I know. We don't stop and think that, though. Somebody will send you $2 cash in the mail.
Yeah, that's a win. It's found money.
They're always the crispest $1 bills, too.
Fresh from the mint.
You almost feel it. Are these things counterfeit? And I guess nobody would know because nobody worries about $1 bills being counterfeit.
It's like the money's so new, you can hear it crying like a newborn. That's the great stuff. The other thing I wanted to talk to you about, because I know we've been talking about it on the show, I find myself slightly encouraged now that every time you read a new Big Ten idea that they want to socialize about the playoff, the fact that now it feels like almost the masses are collectively ignoring it, I kind of feel like it seems like we're trending towards maybe we give the 12-team team the 12-team thing a shot longer than maybe I had anticipated.
Yeah, I think so, and it was interesting, and you're touching on this, when Dellinger's got his report out this week that the Big Ten is now socializing, 28 to 32-team playoff plans, I mean, that was met, it wasn't even there was a vitriolic reaction.
Everybody's just moving on.
You shrug your shoulders and be like, okay, this is a stupid idea that's going nowhere. We're not even going to give this the time of day. And I don't know if that's because, these ideas are now coming out during the season, and so we actually have games to focus on, or if it's just we've seen this song and dance from the Big Ten before. Nobody's taking it seriously at this point. I'm kind of with you, and we heard the comments from Rich Clark to the reporters that were in Chicago this week in the latest CFP meeting that resulted in nothing, which is like every CFP meeting, right?
Yes.
The latest comments from Rich Clark saying, hey, maybe they'll stay at 12 for another year, which I don't think he really has any inside information on things, but it is just a reality of the situation. That December 1st deadline is approaching, and sure, I think the deadline maybe could be moved a little bit, but there does come a point where you have to make a decision for at least next year. And I think the ideal scenario for those of us who would be kind of interested with it staying at 12 would be they kick the can down the road for another year, and then this year's 12-team playoff is just thriller after thriller after thriller, right? And so they can't, in good conscience, of course, they do a lot of things not in good conscience in college sports these days. But, I do think, if this is just an elite 12-team playoff, that makes it harder then to go to some other, screwy system. So I think that's maybe, for those of us like you and I that are maybe interested in seeing this 12-team playoff play out a little bit longer before we go away from it, I wouldn't mind if they just sort of state the decision, say we're going to do the 12-team playoff for at least 2026, and that way, the 2026 season, and so that way we get to see what the playoff looks like this year, and hey, maybe if the move to the straight seeding results in some great matchups and we get a better first round, maybe they just stay 12 teams for a little bit longer.
It's kind of like our NCAA tournament strategy, where it's let the dysfunction and the lack of consensus work in our favor. Nobody's asking for tournament expansion. And honestly, I don't feel like anyone's really asking for playoff expansion. And it's because they're so dysfunctional and everybody's got such competing interests, nobody can kind of agree on anything. It's all right, let us just keep doing the 12-team playoff. And you're right, this year, now that we have straight seeding, I think our first round matchups could be better. Let's get a better quote-unquote tournament this year. And then that's how you build the momentum. It's like, why would you change this? And that's kind of what ends up happening almost every year with the NCAA tournament. It's like, it works. Why would you change this?
Right. And you know, there was a big public mutiny a year and a half ago when the talks were really probably most serious about expansion. And it wasn't just media types. It was, you know, pretty vitriolic blowback from the public about changing the NCAA tournament. Now, I don't know if that's going to bias a 68 tournament in perpetuity or 68 team, but I feel like it has bought us a few more years here. And I think you're right. You know, it was interesting whenever the SEC and Big Ten announced their little alliance that they're not calling an alliance. It's been about a year and a half, 2 years ago now, I guess they announced this. The general reaction I thought of a lot of media types was, oh, isn't this awesome? These two leagues that never really seem to get along with each other. The commissioners had a rivalry. Now they're going to work together to solve big issues. I actually felt the opposite of that all along. I thought the most dangerous thing for college sports as a whole would be the Big Ten and the SEC getting along.
You and I were 100% there. I was like, listen, I'm not saying this is the beginning of a breakaway, but if they start working together and liking it, that's how they break away.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, because I don't buy for a second they're going to solve all these big issues for everybody else. Like,
no,
if they start getting too buddy-buddy, they're going to say, we're going to go into business together, just the two of us, and forget everybody else. But so now that they're not really, like, in harmony anymore, I mean, I don't think it's as bad. I think Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti get along fine. I think it's much better than it was between Greg Sankey and Kevin Warren, and even on back the line.
Delaney.
You know, between the Delaney and Mike Slive. And there's been a rivalry, you know, between the commissioners in those conferences for years now. I don't think it's like that between Sankey and Petitti, but the conferences aren't agreeing with each other. And again, as we've been, the two of us have kind of been saying for all along, a lot of disagreement between those two leagues. I think that's actually a good thing for college sports as a whole. You get those two guys nodding their heads together, that's bad for everybody else if those two ever get synced up.
We're talking with Blake Topmeyer, senior national college football columnist for the USA Today Sports Network. His podcast, SEC Football Unfiltered, available each and every week. Wherever you get your podcasts, follow him on X at B Topmeyer. All right, let's go to that game that you are covering, because I do think it's interesting in the sense that I don't want to act like, hey man, this game's not getting a TV and I'm not watching it, but it feels like one of the least buzzy Alabama-Georgia games I can remember, basically like in the last, you know, basically in the Kirby Smart era after whatever, year one. Is that because Alabama has a loss? Is that because it's not Nick Saban's Alabama? What do you think it is?
I think it's number two. I think it's because it's not Nick Saban's Alabama. And the invincibility cloak has slipped off the Tide. And so it's still a big game. It's a big game. I think it's almost a bigger game because Alabama does have the loss. Right?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, it does have more of the NFL, like, hey, man, like, hungry dog here.
Right. And oh, what? I mean, let's play it out a little bit. Let's play it out as Alabama loses, which is what the odds makers say, right? Georgia at home being the favorite, understandably so. They've been a juggernaut at home under Kirby Smart. If Alabama
my favorite stat, they've not lost this decade.
Oh, my goodness.
Jake Bentley, yeah. Remember that Jake Bentley game in the rain in 2019? Yeah. That's the last loss.
Yeah, which was truly, truly stunning that even happened. But, so then if Alabama loses, they're sitting on two losses. Maybe they could get to the playoff at 9-3, but still, that third loss feels like a haymaker. And you could have undefeated Vanderbilt coming to town, assuming
don't
Vanderbilt
threaten me
beats
with a good time, Blake.
Yeah. If Vanderbilt beats Utah State this week, which they should, Vanderbilt's going to be coming to Tuscaloosa with a chance to deliver the knockout blow on Alabama. And then even if Alabama survives that, then they would go to Columbia Mo to face Mizzou, which would be defeated. Mizzou faces UMass this week. They're not losing to UMass. And so
you
the
sure?
Tigers, which,
Oh no! I think we're losing. Are you there?
But the idea of
struggling.
That is to beat Georgia on the road.
Okay, sorry, we lost you there. Okay, here's where I want you to go back to. Do you realize that Alabama-Vanderbilt game? I don't know if they'll get dropped with a loss to Georgia, but we could have an Alabama-Vanderbilt game where Vanderbilt is the ranked team.
If Alabama would get dropped either, but that's the thing about Vanderbilt is when it beat Alabama last year, I mean, it was just so stunning because we didn't know at that point that Vanderbilt was pretty competent and kind of salty. Like, yeah, they'd won some games earlier in the season, but their schedule really hadn't heated up yet.
Yeah.
And so it just seemed like this shocking result. I mean, if Alabama loses this weekend and Vanderbilt comes in there undefeated, like, yeah, it would still be a little bit jarring just because the name on the jersey says Vanderbilt. But people that have been following this for the last couple of years, like, I think everybody's going to have that game circled a little bit if Vanderbilt goes down there at undefeated and Alabama's is sitting on two losses. Whereas last year, I mean, Alabama-Vanderbilt was off the radar. Nick Saban was talking about how, you know, everybody goes into Vanderbilt and it's like a home game. That's the one place where it's not hard to play. And that was when Vanderbilt was still, you know, lowly cellar-dwelling Vanderbilt at that time. So, yeah, you're right. It's going to be very strange to see Vanderbilt potentially as the only ranked team or at the very least as the better ranked team if Alabama loses this weekend.
Well, it's along the same lines of why when we had the schedule release or the annual opponent release this week and then the full schedules, it was part of where when everybody saw the annual opponents and was just firing off takes, it's like, I get it. The culture is you got to have an opinion on everything. But I just found myself going, how do you know what these teams are going to be in 4 years? This is the most year-to-year I think the sport has ever been, and I can make a case that Vanderbilt with Clark Lea, because not only is he from Nashville, he's a Vanderbilt alum. They are playing the game. They're taking transfers. They're spending money. They are actually trying to compete. I'm not saying that they can max out and be Ohio State, but what I'm saying is why can't they be a mid-tier SEC program when you consider how much money they have? Like, there's no reason they can't if they're going to lower their standards, which also appears that they're going to be willing to do. So, like, why is everyone just freaking out? It's like, I don't even know what these schools are going to be in 5 years.
Well, and the bigger point to that is, I agree with you, but also the fact that these annuals are only one-third of the conference schedule. And we've talked about this in the offseason. If you get a little bit of an easier draw on the annuals, it means there's a greater percentage chance that you're going to draw harder teams in your six open slots on the rotational schedule and vice versa. If you have three of the harder annuals, it's a greater percentage chance that you're going to have the easier teams on your rotational docket. And so I do think it's going to be a lot more balanced in this new construct than what it's been for the last multiple decades.
It's the first SEC, to your point, it was the first SEC talking point that I was like, I don't think they're full of S. Like, I was like, when they were, this is the most balanced schedule we've had in the history of the conference. And I was like, when you actually look at year by year, when they stacked up everybody's schedules, the first talk comes to mind is like, man, that's pretty fair. Like, there's nothing that's going to be a perfect system, but it's like, they've got to schedule 16 teams with 9 games apiece. I was like, those all look pretty good to me.
Yeah, here's where I fall on the rival assignments. I did not get worked up at all by who got the easy draw, who got the hard draw. I mean, yeah, we're all looking at that, and it's worth pointing out, but it's not something to get worked up over. Where I did think, and I wrote about this, we talked about it on our SEC Football Unfiltered podcast, I think the bigger thing was the interruption of some rivalries.
Yeah.
I mean, it is eye-opening to think about Alabama-LSU is now only going to be played twice in a four-year span. I mean, that game has really been one of the games of college football for the last 25 years. I mean, in some years it was the game. It not only, you know, people think of it now, it's like, oh yeah, it determined who would go to the SEC championship. Like, no, not only that, there were some years, you know, back in the BCS era when it determined who's going to be left standing for the BCS championship? You got to survive. I mean, it was a playoff game. Let's call it what it was. It was a playoff game in November that wasn't called a playoff game. But in the two-team BCS era, Alabama and LSU functioned as an annual playoff game. And it just so happened the one year they played twice in the playoffs, right? They got the rematch in the real national championship game and the script flipped. So that, to me, and, you know, I didn't lose my head over it, but in so much as there was controversy with the annual assignments, for me, it wasn't so much about, oh, who got the easy draw, who got the hard draw, because, as we're saying, in the scope of a nine-game schedule, you can balance that out quite a bit more. But the fact that we're losing Alabama, LSU on an annual basis, and as I wrote about this week, I don't think it's a travesty, but I do think for the millennials who kind of grew up on Florida, Tennessee being the game of September for a decade plus, it's kind of a bummer for me to think that, you know, Florida, Tennessee, I know it's not the biggest rivalry in college football, but man, if you're our age, you know,
it kicked off the start of real football season, because CBS had the U.S. Open for tennis, and because of that, CBS's SEC contract did not start until the third week of the year. And so the first 2 weeks, it felt like everybody was playing their bye games and whatnot. And it's like, once you got to Tennessee, Florida, that third week of the year, it's like, all right, real football's on. Like, let's go.
Yeah, absolutely. And the personalities of that game, I know it's changed, but and I've heard for years, like, oh, that game doesn't mean what it used to. And that is a factual statement. But also the idea that that's not a rivalry anymore. Like, I'm sorry. I lived in Knoxville for more than 6 years when both of those teams were down, and it is absolutely still a rivalry. Tennessee fans detest Florida. They do not like them at all. They don't like Alabama, but I think there is a certain portion, not all, but a certain portion of Tennessee fans have, like, a little bit of quiet respect.
I would say
Bama,
there's a begrudging respect was the words that came to mind.
Yeah, there's no respect at all for Florida.
No, it's like, Florida, you know, you wear your jorts and whatnot, your Tebow jersey. Yeah. Tebow's not here to save all your criminals. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think Florida quite feels the same way because, you know, they have bigger rivals and because they've dominated that rivalry, for decades now, not particularly at the Swamp, but even, you know, they've had the better edge of the rivalry substantially for many, many years. So I don't know if it's quite as vitriolic on the Florida side, but, I mean, I think about games that I've covered throughout that series and you didn't always know it because the games were played in September, but, you know, you look back on it and think, boy, these were two mediocre teams playing, but the environment in the stadium that day didn't feel like it. And so, yeah, it's not Alabama, Tennessee. It's not cocktail party. It's not Florida State, Florida. But that is still a big game. It's not what it was in the 90s, but that going to twice every 4 years and a couple other rivalries as well. That is a bit of a bummer. To me, that was the bigger deal, particularly Alabama LSU, than who got the easy draw, who got the hardest draw. That's going to kind of come out in the wash.
How nervous is Tennessee to go to Starkville tomorrow?
I think it's the history as much as anything. I know, you know, Mississippi State's sitting on the 4-0 record. They got the win against Arizona State, but I think it's more the history of Heupel having lost at Arkansas last year, had the consequential loss at South Carolina a few years ago. Overall, Josh Heupel is a fine coach on the road. He's not great on the road. He's also not terrible on the road. He's fair to middling on the road. It's just that he had some consequential, and he's been so good at home, those road losses really stand out. And they were the teams that you thought, I don't really know if they had much business losing to, particularly last year to Arkansas. And so I think from that perspective, it does feel like there's a little bit of a boogeyman in the closet there. And maybe, you know, that seems disrespectful to Mississippi State because they are sitting on a 4-0 record. But no, this more feels like the Arkansas-type scenario last year where, you know, Arkansas wasn't a doormat, but it was a team that you thought on paper, yeah, Tennessee should be able to beat Arkansas, even if it is on the road, and it didn't happen. That to me is is what this game is. Like, you're playing a competent team, a team that I think kind of is sort of like in that Vanderbilt mode.
Yeah.
Last year, I'm not saying their style of play, but
no,
like
but they're built. They look better. Like, in terms of,
yeah.
I mean, literally, like, they physically look more like an SEC football team, because that was the thing that stood about Vanderbilt last year. Is like, when you looked at them on the lines of scrimmage, you're like, okay, that doesn't look like a G5 team. Like, I don't know if they have the depth, but they do enough that's weird on offense that's going to give you some problems. Like, yeah, I think that's a fair comp.
Yeah, and as we saw, Vanderbilt can lay a haymaker on somebody. So that, to me, is what this game is. Like, I think Mississippi State's going to get somebody this year. Maybe they already have. Maybe Arizona State is that team, and that's that. But I think they can get somebody in the SEC, somebody that's not Kentucky, a somebody. I think they're going to land one on somebody. I don't know if it's this week or not. I could also see, Tennessee, laying waste to them, because Josh Heupel's teams also have a tendency to do that. They either, like,
especially against it. Remember, like, when they first went to Missouri, and it's like it's the teams that run his offense. Like, you'll look up and you're like, what was I thinking? Like, he beats them like 38-7. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when they run the same offense.
Yeah, because the same thing that can happen to him sometimes, you know, that warp speed three and out, can happen to the opponent. And if that happens to your opponent, next thing you know, they look up and they're down 28-0. So, yeah, it is. I'll put it this way. It's one heck of a lot more interesting 24 hours out than what I would have thought, would have told you, back in June.
Yeah.
I mean, that one seemed like an automatic for Tennessee back in June. And to me, it doesn't seem to be anything automatic about it at this point.
All right, so we'll wrap here with the game that you said if you could only watch one, LSU and Ole Miss. It's a point and a half right now. As far last I checked, it's still Ole Miss a point and a half. I've been asked about this game all week. I'll give you the same answer that I've been giving people. I think it comes down to which team's weakness sucks the least. I don't really believe in Ole Miss's defensive line all that much. They've not generated a lot of pressure. They've not generated a lot of tackles for loss. With that being said, I don't know how you can believe in LSU's offensive line right now. They've not blocked Louisiana Tech. They didn't even really block Selah all that well. To me, it's like that whole game just comes down to which of those two units gets the better, maybe which of those two units gets the least. Whichever unit's the worst, that's going to be the loser.
No, yeah, that would be my headline thought as well, is who can hide their weakness best,
yeah.
or maybe,
scheme around it.
Which, yeah. The other thing I think is, like, I think we could be headed for another thriller in the way that the last two were. And so I also wonder if it comes down to which quarterback can go into hero mode at the end of the game. Who's in hero mode in the fourth quarter? I mean, that was the thing last year about Nussmeier, is for a large chunk of that game, he didn't really play very well.
He was off. I think he had three picks.
Yeah, Ole Miss's defense was playing the way they played for the whole game against Georgia, and had him out of sorts for a while. But then in the fourth quarter, he kind of rose up and made some hero ball plays. And so I think that could factor in too, is which one of those guys puts on the cape in the fourth quarter. I'm really interested in seeing Trinidad Chambliss in this game. I mean, I think he's a fascinating story, and I'd be curious to see who Ole Miss's quarterback is going to be once Austin Simmons gets back to 100%. I'm not totally buying that.
You want my answer?
Yeah.
Austin.
I think it's probably the same as mine.
It's Austin Simmons.
You think so?
Yeah, I got about 3 million reasons why.
Okay. That'll be interesting. But does your answer change if Ole Miss?
Then my answer, I'll say this. Text me on Saturday night.
Okay.
But yes, as of right now, that's... If you go away from Simmons, you lose Simmons, and he's built the whole thing around him.
And that's the issue, right? And that's what every coach is dealing with, is you're playing the season game, but you're also playing the long game at the same time. And that's what makes it so hard to juggle.
All right, my man. Safe travels.
Okay, thanks.
That is Blake Topmeyer, senior national college football columnist of the USA Today Sports Network.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.